Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you to this program. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream channel and then searching for Gary Null. Also, I mentioned a phone number. And the reason I mention that phone number is because from time to time, on any of the stations that you may be listening to this, on our sister station WBAI or PFW, whichever station, we're all over the United States with different stations, they have problems. And if you have that telephone number, then you all you have to do is just dial it and you can listen in, you can go to the archives, you miss nothing. Let me give an example. About 2.5 months ago, there was a power outage or substantially reduced power at our sister station that you're listening to right now, WPFW in Washington. For 8 weeks, we went from 50,000 watts, which is a terrific signal, and we went down to under 2,000 watts. I just found this out a week ago. That meant that for 8 weeks, about 90% of the people who normally would listen couldn't if they lived outside of a 1,500-watt range. And 1,500 is a tiny, tiny amount of people. It's like a college station on a campus. And I knew something was wrong because I wasn't getting the kind of feedback and calls normally. The moment I mention calls, the whole line lights up and it's lit by anywhere from 50 to 100 calls trying to get in. And even during our fun drive, we didn't have the response that we normally would have had. And then we found out. But then I found out that we had a spike in one day, and we didn't know why, of 9,650 different new listeners listening over the telephone. And Jason says, gee whiz, in addition to all the tens of thousands of people listening over the telephone, hundreds of thousands, we suddenly got this spike. Now we know why we got the spike. It was people who could not hear us on WPFW dialing the telephone. It happened here on the Progressive Radio Network, where we originated our program on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, where I was on, and I was just on yesterday at Christian Broadcasting, and with huge audiences. The audiences dwarf anything in non-commercial radio, by the way. And a lot of those people were interested in health, in a good way. And I'm on there all the time on different stations, and I share information. It's the same information. There's nothing different in my message or the quality of the information shared. In any case, we got an enormous spike, so big that it actually prevented many of our regular people over the Internet from being able to get on. We found the problem, and we expanded our bandwidth within about 4 to 5 days. Problem solved. So that's why you should always keep this number. So for any reason, at your normal time that you do not have me there, you can call this number and you'll be able to get me. All right? 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. Now, today I don't have a guest because I have so much to share. I've got a lot of information on health and nutrition. A commentary today from Tom Englehart from TomDispatch.com. A letter to an unknown whistleblower. How the security state's mania for secrecy will create you. Really insightful. I also have a commentary on cantaloupes versus Al-Qaeda. What's more dangerous? From Truthout and Michael Mira. Also today, a insight into the Trans-Pacific Partnership and how, if this goes through from Public Citizen, the vast majority of Americans, 90% of Americans, will have to take a pay cut. But hold on a second. Most Americans are not making a living wage as it is, and this could really hurt them even more and throw another whole group of maybe 50 million Americans into poverty. I'll share that. There's a new lawsuit that's going to the Supreme Court against Monsanto. That's good news, and I'll share that. So you see, we have a lot to share, and I will allow for time at the end of the show so you can call in our talkback segment and share your thoughts and questions and information. Let's begin with a study on garlic. Now, as many of you know, I'm a big fan of garlic. Now, there's many ways of taking garlic. You can take the raw garlic in a juice. That's hearty. That's good. That's powerful. And it's socially alienating. But if you had a cold or a flu, or if you had cancer or high blood pressure, who cares? I mean, saving your life, that's the important thing. Or if you simply wanted to be healthier and kill off your bacteria and viruses and promote a healthier blood pressure, blood sugar level, kill cancer cells, then lightly cooked is fine. Here's the latest on why garlic is important. A new study out of China with 158,000 lung cancer deaths in the United States, and this was looked at very carefully, saw that it has a great deal to do with our body and its immune system. According to an article published in Cancer Prevention Research, people who, quote, consume raw garlic as a regular part of their diet were 44% less likely to suffer from lung cancer. That is a tremendous amount of lives saved. I mean, right there, you're looking at over 70,000 lives a year saved in the United States alone. And so my suggestion is, if you know someone who smokes and they're not going to give it up, and that's the hard part of the equation. We all know people that are close to us who are not going to change, no matter what advantage they have in the change. They're going to stick with the bad habits till the end. At least this way, you can insist upon it. Let me give you an example. I have a friend who does not eat well and eats a lot of fried food. He's a bachelor, and his whole life he's never gotten into cooking, and he doesn't have any patience. He's not going to go to the farmer's market. So he just eats out almost every single meal. So what I suggested was, all right, you're not going to change that, but why don't you start including garlic and raw onions? Now, I know he likes baked potatoes, so I said, in your baked potato. So one day, I had a bunch of friends over, and I showed them all, because they're all kind of equally vulnerable, because none of them have a great diet. And I made some baked potatoes. I showed them how you wash the potato skin really thoroughly, and then you grease it down with coconut oil, because the coconut oil can withstand high heat and without denaturing, and hence it protects the alpha-lipoic acid and other nutrients in the skin, because it's really the skin of the potato that's really nourishing. The skin to about a quarter inch in, that's where most of your nutrition is. And then how you take a knife and you slice about a half inch in, about every half inch around the potato. And that gives you a much more even cooking of the potato. Otherwise, a lot of people will bake a potato and it's overcooked on the outside and it's still kind of raw on the inside. You never want to microwave, and or they cook it too long and it's all kind of mushy. Restaurants do that. They'll put potatoes in early. They'll put it in aluminum foil, which is not good. The heat from the cooking causes microparticles, the aluminum, to go into the food that it's being used on, and that's potatoes. So by basting the potato in coconut oil and then slicing it, but only about a quarter to a maximum half inch in, it's going to have much more even heating and hence more even cooking. And then you don't put it up at a high temperature. Never bake a baked potato at baking. You're definitely going to overcook it, and it's going to be too much heat. So instead, cook it at 100 degrees less. Let's say like 325. And that way it'll bake, but you're not going to destroy the nutrients, especially with the coconut oil on. Then separately, you saute some garlic. But when I say saute, I'm talking about it at a temperature that is so low, you could put your finger in and not burn your finger. It takes a little longer to saute the garlic, but if you thinly cut the garlic, then it's 5 minutes, and it's done. Just when it starts to turn just slightly golden, not brown, then it's overcooked. So then you have your garlic and lots of it. Then you take an onion, a sweet onion, a Vidalia, Maui, 1040, whatever it is. You cut it up. You rinse it once it's cut for about 30 seconds. That gets rid of some of the bitters and the volatile oils that make it a little too tart and a little too acidic for some people in their mouth. And then you get some cayenne and ideally some mushrooms as well. And it really doesn't matter. All the mushrooms are beneficial, but only if they are cooked. Mushrooms do not release their medicinal value raw. And a lot of people don't know that. So you lightly saute them. And then you put all that inside that potato. The raw onions, the cooked garlic, lots of flaxseed and olive oil, extra virgin organic olive oil, some black pepper, which is very good for you, and Himalayan sea salt. That they all liked. They loved that. So with one single item, I was able to show them how to get garlic, olive oil, onions, mushrooms, all healing into the body. So you see, most people who are resistant to change are not resistant if we work with something that they're already eating. And we have to be patient because, remember, the goal is to have them modify something that helps them live a longer life and healthier. There was an interesting... let me just quote the final thing here in this article. It says, quote, in conclusion, protective association between intake of raw garlic and lung cancer has been observed with a dose-response pattern, suggesting that garlic may potentially serve as a chemopreventive agent for lung cancer. Effective components in garlic in lung cancer chemopreventative warrant further in-depth investigation. So what they're saying is this will help prevent lung cancer. And that's really a good thing. Next up, I want to deal with health benefits of a food that I don't like, but a lot of people do, and especially in the South, and the further south you go, the more they like it. In fact, you get down in Mississippi and Louisiana, down in the Bayou country, it's everywhere. It's called okra, O-K-R-A. You can grow it year-round all over the South. But it generally comes up only during the summertime. And it looks similar to a pepper. It belongs to the same genus as cotton and hibiscus. And it's been around for a long time. It originated in Africa. And we've used it here for over 300 years, mainly in gumbos. It's what thickens a gumbo. And it has tender leaves and a fruit. It's kind of has a slimy quality, a gelatinous, and that's what I don't like about it. But it really is good for your health. It's rich in fiber. It lowers your cholesterol. It contains folic acid and vitamin B6 in amounts equivalent to about 1/10 of the recommended daily intake for Americans. And it's overall good for you. It even has quercetin in it. And so why should we take okra? Because you never see it up north. I mean, you just don't see it anywhere. It's anti-diabetic. It can help lower your blood sugar level. It's anti-lipid in that the soluble fibers in okra, called pectin, are able to lower blood cholesterol by about 10%. That's good. And it's a brain-functioning nutrient in there, and really good for improving brain functioning. So it's inexpensive, it's easy to use, and we should be trying more of it. And if you want a natural thickener in a soup or a stew, it'll do the job. Now, another thing that we don't eat a lot of, and we should, are radishes. Now, there are hundreds of varieties of radishes. And now we have new research that has just been released that shows that radishes help boost your kidney health, and protect you against cancer. This is the latest from Christina Sarich, Natural Society. The common radish, quote, is often overlooked vegetable with wonderful healing properties. This root-like vegetable is of the cruciferous variety, in the same family as arugula, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, and watercress, and offers multiple trace minerals and healing phytonutrients that our bodies need. And once used in ancient Chinese medicine and introduced to the Americans by Columbus, radishes appeared in Mexico and Haiti in the 1500s. They were part of many of the colonial gardens. And they come in all kinds of varieties and colors, from ravishing red to blushing pink and even purple, and can weigh up to 5 pounds and grow up to 7 feet long. Yes, that's correct, depending upon the composting. Use a good composting tea, you can get that in healthy soil. Radishes are good for their folic acid, and pregnant women generally are deficient in folic acid. They're excellent in vitamin C, potassium, and phosphorus, and sulfur, and the combination of all that means that they have anti-cancer properties. And radishes are also helpful in treating gallbladder and liver ailments, as well as in helping to flush the kidneys so the kidney stones and gallstones don't develop in your body. Now, one of the ways that I use radishes is I use it as a concentrate in a diluted juice. Now, what does that mean? It means that, like watercress, arugula, kale, Swiss chard, collard greens, I don't use a lot of it because it's too concentrated, but I use enough of it, and I would use maybe a quarter of a cup of radishes, and I would juice that in about 16 ounces of apple, celery, and cucumber juice. So you get the benefit of having eaten those radishes, but in a juice, and you can always juice more than what you can eat. Now, another thing that we don't consume enough of, and we should, are bay leaves. According to the latest research, the bay leaves are able to help people with type 2 diabetes who have trouble metabolizing glucose. And they improve dramatically, quote, insulin function. So not only did bay leaves help to regulate blood glucose in diabetic patients, but they also lowered your total cholesterol and triglycerides. So the heart and the liver, and mind you, the liver is responsible for breaking down glucose, were benefited by consuming this fragrant herb. So here's what we know. You can help lower your cholesterol, lower your triglycerides, improve your glucose level, help maintain better sugar levels, especially if you're pre or diabetic, by having some bay leaves. Now, most people only have bay leaves when it's in a soup. No, you can eat fresh bay leaves, and you can juice them also. I believe that the only healthy water is filtered deep spring water. That's the only water I drink. Most people, however, believe that bottled water is healthier. So every time you look, someone's got a bottle of water, and I certainly appreciate their effort. But are they looking to see what's going to happen with that plastic bottle? Now, if you get a bottle and you keep refilling it, that's fine. If you have a recyclable plastic, that's fine. If you use glass, that's best of all. But what about the water itself? We assume that it's clean and healthy. Think again. One more reason that everyone, I believe, should have a water filter in their home. This is the latest. Quote, bottled water found to contain 24,000 chemicals, including endocrine disruptors. Quote, widespread consumer demand for plastic products that are free of the hormone-disrupting chemical bisphenol A has led to some significant positive changes in the way that food, beverages, and water containers are manufactured. But a new study out of Germany has found that thousands of other potentially harmful chemicals are still leaching from plastic products into food and beverages, including an endocrine-disrupting chemical called EDC, known as di-2-ethylhexyl fumarate. And it is completely unregulated. And this was done by a professor at Goethe University, Frankfurt, in conjunction with a team of researchers from the German Federation Institute of Hydrology. They looked at 18 different bottled water products, and they found, quote, 24,520 different chemicals present in the tested water. But a major concern, and the apparent underpinning of the study's findings, was the DEHF, a plasticizer chemical that is used to make plastic bottles more flexible. According to reports, DEHF was clearly identified in the tested water as the most consistent, obvious culprit causing anti-estrogenic activity, despite trace amounts of more than 25,000 other potentially damaging chemicals that stood out. So, how do you stop that from happening? It's simple. Get yourself a good water filter. Then have yourself a non-plastic container, like a glass container or a thermos. And then keep your water that way. Best thing you can do. And finally, for those of you who've been taking grapeseed, and I know some of you have taken grapeseed because it's a common ingredient, not a common, it is one of the many superstar ingredients in some of the compounding powders. This is the latest research on grapeseed from a university in Italy. Quote, grapeseed given hypertension thumbs up. Researchers say that a new grapeseed procyanidins, not only using water as extraction solvent, is effective in blood pressure management when coupled with lifestyle modifications. So once again, the great little grapeseed. That's why you should be eating seeded grapes, skin and seeds, and drinking grape juice, because when they make the grape juice from organic grapes, of course, they press the seed and the skin together. That way you're getting the best of the best. I'm Gary Noll, and that's the latest almost 25 minutes of health and nutrition update that we like to give you every day. When we come back from our break, we're going to take a look at several issues. Monsanto, cantaloupes versus Al-Qaeda, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and an interesting commentary. Please stay with us. Haven't had a chance to see that wonderful play down on Broadway that gives a really interesting history of Motown. I suggest you take a look at Motown, the play. It's really well done. My special for today, and I haven't offered this, wow, half a year possibly, is red stuff, because we just got a shipment in. This is the new and improved Red Stuff Extra. First, it's all natural, it's raw, and it has wonderful nutrients in it from the finest quality sources. It's GMO, it's gluten-free, no GMOs, vegan. It has 10,000 ORAC per serving, per scoop. It's got a big jar. This is the new one I'm holding in my hand. This is Red Stuff Extra. Here's what it's got in it. It has tart cherry. Finally, I put tart cherry as the number one ingredient in here because I know how powerful tart cherry is. It's alone as a superstar what it does in the body. So it's the number one ingredient. Tomatoes, apple pectin, acerola berries, mangosteen. You rarely hear about mangosteen, but it's right up there with acai and wolfberry, gooseberry. It's right up there. The organic flax seeds, prunes, macai berry. I don't know anyone else who put macai, M-A-Q-U-I, in their product, but I found it, and I saw the science on it, and I put it in. Blood oranges, red wine extract, mind you, no alcohol. just the extract of the red wine, prunes, plums, oranges, pears, pomegranates, mango, watermelon, papaya, passion fruit, green tea extract, kiwi, bromelain, digestive enzymes of all kinds, resveratrol, cinnamon, ginger root, probiotics by the billions, 8 billion, that's 8 billion per serving non-dairy. And, wow, just all those great things. Sweetened with a little xylitol, natural strawberry flavor. I've improved the flavor a bit. Stevia. So this is it. I mean, of all the hundreds of products that I've created, this is one of the top two, green stuff and red stuff. They're kind of equal. And you always should take one and the other. So this is the new and improved red stuff. It's called Red Stuff Extra. Now here's the deal. And until it goes, 500 grams, by the way, big. Today and today only, for the next 24 hours, you're not going to pay $109.99 at regular retail. You're going to only pay $59.99. You're saving $50. I repeat, you're saving $50 for what some people have claimed is the most powerful, important food concentrate that they've ever put into their bodies. Now, I got a lot of traveling to do starting this afternoon. And I take all this with me. I take it in bags. And red stuff and green stuff, greens and grains, berry blast. I have a gallon bag. And that's what I live off of because I can't get to the restaurants where I go and get a vegan meal. But as long as I got my red stuff, my green stuff, I'm good to go. So you're getting the red stuff extra until supplies are gone. Call this number. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Again, you're only paying $59.99. You're saving $50. 877-627-5065. We just got them in this morning. And so Diane and the staff says, can you offer those? Yes. Separately, some new programs you can expect. We have 20 new programs starting on the Progressive Radio Network in the next 3 weeks. Max Kaiser Show, wow. Vegan Radio with Steve Pruzak. Education Federation with Fordham Professor Mark Nason. Bankruptcy and Immigration Hour with Nathan Hoffman. The Documentary Hour with Ken DeVecchio. Anti-Aging and a Senior Show. We're still interviewing people for that. Someone who's a senior citizen who would like to talk about getting old in America and how you can slow it down and reverse it. The Community of Voices by Vinnie Canizzaro, Derek Jensen's show, Stuart Goodnick, the Mystical Positivist, and Free Form with Terrence McNally. We're talking about some real heavyweights. So, and we have 10 more after that coming. I'll give you that information next week. 5,731,344 total minutes listened in the near past to Progressive Radio Network, making it number one. So we appreciate that. This is the latest on environmental issues, but it goes beyond the environment. This is from Public Citizen. As people in this audience know, I am opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership for a lot of reasons. It is the worst treaty ever. We should all be contacting our legislators and telling them no, under no circumstances should we have this treaty. But the fix is in. Here's what they say, quote, the verdict is in. Most U.S. workers will see wage losses as a result of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. A sweeping U.S. so-called free trade deal under negotiation with 11 Pacific Rim countries. That's the conclusion of a report just released by the Nonpartisan Center for Economic and Policy Research. The Trans-Pacific Partnership corporate proponents have tried to sell the NAFTA-style deal to the U.S. public and policymakers by claiming it will result in gains for the U.S. economy. The often cited study from the Peterson Institute for International Economics that used sweeping assumptions to project a tiny benefit from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We brought that study down to size back in January, showing that even if one accepts the pro-Trans-Pacific Partnership author's litany of optimistic assumptions, the much-touted benefit from the Trans-Pacific Partnership would all amount to an extra quarter, that's 25 cents per person per day. As this week's report points out, the pro-Trans-Pacific Partnership study projected figures that were based purely upon speculation. So now they're saying this goes through, 90% of Americans will lose money in the workplace. Why? Because there's no longer going to be state laws protecting you, federal laws protecting you. Unions will be all gone within 2 years of this going in. You won't have a union left, or minimal. And there won't be any environmental protections. There won't be any oversight of Wall Street or any of our major industries. It'll just be absolute wanton destruction of our economy. That is unfortunate. Now, one of the things that's destroying our economy and is never up there for being challenged is how much we're spending on defense. 53 cents out of every tax dollar goes to the absolutely, totally corrupt military-industrial spy complex. Now, I've gone into great depth on different programs about who are these people? Do they really provide protection? The answer is these are all corporate people. These are the elite who form corporations or have corporations that have lobbyists. They get contracts, either no-bid contracts or preferred contracts, and just to keep doing work. Now, I'm going to do a program on Monday night, and it's going to be a big one. It's Who Controls the World. I've been working on this for over 6 months. You won't want to miss it. You're going to hear information and insight you've never heard before, all fully documented, full quality scholarship. And I had so much information in collecting this, especially the bureaucracies, that virtually all the major governmental agencies are nothing more than bloated, destructive, corrupt, inefficient bureaucracies that we pay for. Once they start, they become like a cancer that metastasizes. And we don't go back and look at these things, and we should. And I will be doing that. Well, one of these is that we have to keep spending money on, you know, homeland security to protect us against Al-Qaeda. Well, according to Michael Muir of Truthout, one of the most important revelations from the international drama over Edward Snowden's National Security Agency leaks in May is the exposure of a nearly lunatic disproportion in threat assessment and spending by the U.S. government. Now, what do I mean by that? This disproportion has been spawned by a fear-based politics of terror that mandates unlimited money and media attention for even the most tenacious terrorism threats, while lethal domestic risks such as contaminated food from our industrial agribusiness system are all but ignored. You've heard me mention many times on this program that the number one cause of death and injury in the United States is American medicine, and yet we don't do a thing about it. I mean, we actually have upwards of 700,000 Americans die each year who didn't have to, and over 10 million injured each year who shouldn't have been injured by medicine. Okay, well, did we learn any lessons? Obviously not, because we don't want to acknowledge the problem outside of in some obtuse scientific reference. Oh, yeah, it was so many people died from taking prescription medications. So many died of bed sores that were preventable. So many died of malnutrition that they got from inside of a hospital. So many died from unnecessary surgeries. But it never means anything changes. And yet we spend $3 trillion a year on our industrial healthcare system. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give a comparison of federal spending on food safety intelligence versus anti-terrorism intelligence to bring the irrationality of the threat assessment process into stark relief. For example, in 2011, the year of Osama bin Laden's death, the State Department reported that 17 Americans were killed in all terrorist attacks worldwide. The same year, a single outbreak of listeriosis from tainted cantaloupe killed 33 people in the United States. And foodborne pathogens also sickened 48 million, hospitalizing 127,839 and causing 3,037 deaths. Now, mind you, that is a typical year, not an aberration. We have more to fear from contaminated cantaloupes than from Al-Qaeda. Yet the United States spends $75 billion a year spread across 16 intelligence agencies in a scattershot attempt to prevent terrorism and illegally spying on all of us in the process. And by comparison, the Food and Drug Administration spends about $1 billion in the upcoming budget for food inspection programs. So, in the past 10 years, outbreaks of foodborne illness have affected all 50 states, with hundreds of food recalls annually involving many Americans' leading brands, including Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Taylor Farms Organics, Ralph's, Kroger, Food for Less, Costco, Dole, Kellogg's, and dozens of others. And there have been multi-state recalls of contaminated cheese, spinach, greens, lettuce, milk, ground beef, eggs, brown rice, peanut butter, mangoes, cantaloupe, and hundreds of other popular foods. And since September 11, 2001, foodborne pathogens have killed 36,000 Americans. And during the same period, terrorism has killed 323 Americans worldwide. Now imagine for a moment if food safety threats were marketed to the public in the same lurid fashion as terror threats. Here would be a press release. Homeland Security announced today that America is under attack by deadly terrorist cells. These terrorists are often originating overseas. The threat to our security is credible. They can destroy our way of life and must be stopped. They have no respect for individual life or democratic freedoms. They operate on a cellular basis and hide in darkened spaces. They kill over 3,000 innocent Americans every year and are likely to strike again at any moment. These deadly operatives are masters of disguise, often concealing themselves in peanut butter sandwiches, spinach salads, hamburgers, milkshakes, gourmet cheeses. Their leaders have code names such as E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria, Staph bacteria, and Hepatitis A. We urge all Americans to be on alert with profound respect. All right? So that is what I'm trying to say. So sooner or later, we're going to have to put this in perspective. We don't have a problem defending our country, but that takes about $200 billion, not $1.4 trillion. The rest of that is just profit to greedy and corrupt companies, and we should know the truth. But we don't. And that bothers me, that concerns me, that we're not being told the truth, just about anything. I say good for the whistleblowers. You are heroes in all fields, from the EPA to the FDA. I interviewed Dr. Graham at the FDA in Washington and put it in our documentary on prescription for disaster. He knew in advance that Vioxx would kill and injure and have an increased risk of heart attack and stroke, yet he was not allowed to call for a recall of Vioxx. It was never officially recalled. It was voluntarily recalled, and yet over 60,000 Americans died. I don't know who all the whistleblowers are. I've had many on this program. According to Tom Engelhardt, he doesn't know either. He doesn't know who you are or what you do or how old you are. He just knows that you exist somewhere in our future as surely as does tomorrow or next year. Now, you may be young and computer savvy or a career federal employee. You might be someone who entered government service filled with idealism or signed on to the bureaucracy just to make a living. You may be a libertarian, a closet left-winger, or a mainstream and down the center as is possible. What we know is this, that just as Edward Snowden and Bradley, now Chelsea Manning, did, You will, for reasons of your own, feel compelled to take radical action to put yourself in danger. When the time comes, you will know that this is what you must do, that this is why you find yourself where you are, and that you're going to tell us plenty that has been kept from us about how our government really operates. You're going to shock us, possibly to the core. And how exactly do I know this? Because despite our striking inability to predict the future, it's a no-brainer that the national security state is already building you into a labyrinthine system in the urge of its officials to control all of us in every situation, and in their mania for all-encompassing secrecy, and their classification not just of the millions of documents they generate daily, but essentially all their operations are secret or top secret. In their all-encompassing urge to shut off the most essential workings of the government from the eyes of the citizenry, in their escalating urge to punish anyone who would bring their secret activities to light, in their urge to see or read or listen to or peer into the lives of everyone on the planet, in their urge to build a global surveillance state and a military that will dominate everything in its path, in their urge to drop bombs on Pakistan and fire missiles at Syria, in their urge to be able to assassinate just about anyone, anywhere, robotically, they are birthing you. But let us also be aware, in every action there is also built in a reaction. Give our national security managers credit, though. They may prove to be the master builders of the early 21st century. Their ambitions have been breathtaking, and their ability to command or staggering amounts of our taxpayer dollars to pay for those projects hardly seems possible. Their monuments to themselves, their visions of pyramids and ziggurats, like the vast data storage center of the National Security Agency building, which is $2 billion in Buffdale, Utah, to keep a lot of private information about us there. Or how about the Geospatial Intelligence Agency at $2 billion with 16,000 employees monitoring our systems every single day, every square inch of the planet in their own unique way. In their urge to control everything, to see everything, from your Facebook chatter to the emails of the Brazilian president, they are creating a system built on blowback. And not just from the outside or distant lands. Chalmers Johnson, who took blowback to which was just an obscure term of CIA tradecraft and embedded it in our everyday language, would have instantly recognized what they're doing, creating a blowback machine whose unintended consequences, which, by the way, I believe was his term, are guaranteed, like the effects of the Snowden revelations, to stun us all in a myriad of ways. They have built their system so elaborately, so expansively, and their ambitions have been so grandiose that they've had no choice but to embed you in their developing global security state, deep in the entrails of their secret world. Tens of thousands of yous live. Yous galore, all of whom see some part, some corner of the world that is curtailed off from the rest of us. And because they have built using the power of tomorrow, they have created a situation in which the prospective whistleblower, the leaker of tomorrow, has access not just to a few pieces of paper, but to piles beyond imagination. They, not you, have prepared the way for future mass document dumps, for staggering releases of a sort that once upon a time, in a far more modest system based largely on paper, would have been inconceivable. They have, that is, paved the way for everything that you are one day guaranteed to do. They have created the means by which their mania for secrecy will repeatedly come to grips with your intemperance. They have created you. Worse yet, for them, they have created a world populated with tens of thousands of people, often young, often nomadic in job terms, often with remarkable computer skills, who have access to parts of their vast system, to unknown numbers of secret programs and documents, and the many things from phone calls to emails and credit card transactions to social media interactions and biometric data that they want you to keep safely stored. And it doesn't matter what they, in their post-Snowden panic, may do to try to prevent you from accessing their systems. None of the new rules and programs they are installing to prevent the next Edward Snowden or Bradley Manning from collecting anything right down to the national security equivalent of the kitchen sink will stop you. After all, you may be even one of the ones they have chosen to install those safeguards, to put those measures in place. You may be one of the ones they specifically trained in the intricacies and fail-safe mechanisms of their system. And here's the uncanny thing about you. Just doing what comes naturally, you will overcome any measures they try to install and make a mockery of any measures or training programs they put in place. To help your coworkers spot you, yeah, you'll figure that out. Almost by definition, they won't be able to find you until it's too late. You'll dismay none of the traits that someone about to betray their world should exhibit. And no wonder, since you'll be the one of many recognizable cogs in the machinery until almost the moment, already too late in the game for them when you aren't. You are, in that sense, the perfect double agent. Until you, in essence, become a spy for the American people, for the old democratic system in which government was the people's property, and those who elect were supposed to let us know what they were doing in our name. You aren't just masquerading as one of them, you are. I have no way of knowing what will first strike you as wrong. I just know that something will. It might be very specific and close at hand, something amiss you see in the program you're working on, some outrageous expenditure of money or set of lies about what an agency or outfit is doing, or some act of or set of acts that you, in growing up, have been taught were un-American. The possibilities are legion. After all, the national security system that they've built and engorged with taxpayer dollars using fear and the excuse of American safety has dispatched armies and special op outfits and drones all over the world to commit mayhem and increase global instability, to kill civilians, to wipe out wedding parties, kidnap and torture the innocent, assassinate by robot, and so on. Or maybe it all just sneaks up on you, a wrongness about it. Maybe even if you're too young to remember the totalitarian states of the previous century, something about the urge of our national security managers to create total systems of control, trump the law, and do as they please in the name of their need for knowledge and profit will simply get under your skin. You'll know that isn't the way it's supposed to be. At some point, it'll just creep you out. And then, even though until that moment you didn't know it, you'll be ready. I'm Gary Knoll. Here's a question for you. If we didn't know Martin Luther King as the historical person, but rather we had Martin Luther King today starting from scratch with his passion, his rhetoric, his capacity to challenge social injustice, to challenge the military state, to challenge the war machine, to challenge the abuses of power and the dichotomy in our society of have and have nots, what would happen to him? Now let's say that he had not yet won his Nobel Prize, but rather he was an organizer against war, against corruption, against the multinational interest, against our Trans-Pacific Partnership and Monsanto and all the other genetically engineered food and all the other things that he could find concern with. What do you imagine that the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, who feels that any dissent is too much dissent, and the people that surround him, all warmongers, all without conscience, all who believe that everyone who gets in the way of their schemes should be dealt with. What do you think would happen with Martin Luther King today? I'm interested in your response. Call us now on our talkback, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment with Talkback. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. If you haven't listened to the Sunday evening show, I do it at 8 to 9 p.m. Go to the Progressive Commentary Hour. It's all about health and healing and open calls. So it's our talk back. It's a whole hour on just healthy conversation. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that some farmers are suing Monsanto. Well, here's the latest from Rebecca Winters. Quote, a lawsuit challenging biotech giant Monsanto's genetically modified seed patents is heading to the U.S. Supreme Court. The St. Louis-based chemical company, known for its Roundup glyphosate herbicide and the patented GM crops bred to withstand glyphosate use or to create their own pesticide or both, has already filed more than 130 lawsuits involving some 400 farmers and over 50 small businesses for patent infringement when these seeds have been found contaminating their fields. 73 organic farm and conventional family farmers, public advocacy groups, and seed companies have joined the lawsuit against Monsanto in an attempt to block the company from suing them when these biotech crop seeds inadvertently contaminate their farms. So now it's going to the Supreme Court. And by the way, Monsanto has set aside $10 million every year and a staff of 75 employees for the sole purpose of investigating some 500 farmers a year and prosecuting for patent infringement, which means that if a bird drops one of Monsanto's seeds on a farmer's land, Monsanto will go in there and sue them. Bill from Atlanta. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. Bill, speak up. You're on the air. Bill, not there? Okay. Sorry, Bill. We tried to reach you. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, as you know, we had mentioned the other day about the fact that a lot of people from WBAI had asked me about, why am I volunteering all this time to help people at the retreat when I was on the local station board and I left after 2 years. And I said that it was primarily because I didn't see that there was any results. I didn't feel like I was making a difference. It's basically a bunch of factions fighting against each other, like kids throwing sand at each other in a sandbox. And I just saw too much corruption, and I felt that I was being ineffective, that I could help the station much better in other ways. Well, you know, a lot of your audience, when they email me, they do talk, and I don't tell you a lot of this, but they do talk about how you were summarily just terminated from the station, and you kind of moved on, and you created Progressive Radio Network. Well, I'm getting a bunch of emails today from listeners saying that Bernard White, who used to be the program director and the manager there, he was terminated in 2009, and he claims that it was because he was black. Now, this is the man who made WBAI, in my opinion, a black nationalist station, and he was responsible for making the decision to just terminate your show for no reason at all. And I don't know if you realize this, but he brought this up to the courts, and the courts essentially threw out his case. And he said that he didn't have enough information to say that there was any race discrimination.
Well, here is the issue. I read that today, that the suit that he had brought against Pacifica and Steve Brown was thrown out. And the judge said that, you know, that you're saying racial discrimination, and yet the person that let you go was black, and the person that replaced you was black, and the top executives were black, and at least half the board were people of color. So there was no merit to it. What bothers me is that that suit cost the foundation almost $500,000. And when we think of how stressed the stations are at this moment for cash, that I would have rather seen that money go instead of into a frivolous lawsuit, instead to have paid the salaries, to have paid for the premiums, to have paid for the transmitter, transponder, and rent. I believe it would have been far better wisely used. Okay? Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Finally today, from a social issue. This is from Common Dreams. Quote, unleashed and unaccountable, FBI's post-9/11 abuse of power. New ACLU study tracks explosion in secret surveillance and infiltration programs that trample constitutional and civil rights. This is from Sarah Lazar, staff writer. The FBI has abused its ever-widening post-9/11 powers to target immigrants, minorities, and political dissidents through secret surveillance and infiltration programs that trample constitutional rights and run roughshod over principles of fairness and justice. Quote, there's an article entitled Unleashed and Unaccountable, the FBI's Unchecked Abuse of Authority. This comprehensive report traces the explosion in the FBI's surveillance authority and reach over the past 12 years and tracks systemic violations of First and Fourth Amendment protections as the National Security Agency spying scandal continues to ricochet across the globe. The study paints an in-depth picture of how a political climate of permissiveness led the FBI's abuse and overreach. In the aftermath of 9/11, Congress, backed by the Department of Justice and the White House, have expanded the Bureau's authority to survey and investigate Americans, invoking the threat of terrorism to pass legislation from the Patriot Act in 2001 to the FISA Amendments Act in 2008. In conjunction with these political developments, the FBI has revised its own internal guidelines and claimed the right, according to the report, to investigate and spy on U.S. people without reasonable suspicions. What have these expanded authorities meant in practice? Well, the report outlines a litany of abuses over the last 12 years, including racial mapping program in which FBI officials gathered demographic information on people in the United States and mapped communities according to their racial and ethnic composition. Abuses also included warrantless wiretaps, as well as FBI accessing private information from financial telecommunications and credit companies with no judicial approval. As recently exposed National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden, the FBI also tracked phone calls invoking the Patriot Act. The ACLU report shows that the Bureau targeted protesters and religious groups with, quote, aggressive tactics that infringe on their free speech, religion, and associational rights, end quote. The Bureau has abused no-fly lists to recruit informants and unjustly targeted Chinese and Russian communities, Spanish-speaking population, and communities in color in the United States. Authors of the report slam the Bureau that has been shrouded in secrecy and sheltered from public debate and criticism. Quote, courts have been reluctant to challenge government secrecy demands, and despite years of debate in Congress, the proper scope of domestic surveillance, it took unauthorized leaks by a whistleblower to finally reveal the government's secret interpretations of these laws and the Orwellian scope of its domestic surveillance program, end quote. And the authors offer a list of 15 reforms to rein in the FBI's power and curtail well-documented and numerous constitutional violations, end quote. And good for the ACLU and its national security project for doing this. Last night, on one of the talk shows, I turned on one of the, I think it was Fallon's show, and they were asking a simple question about freedom of speech. So they went out and they wanted to ask a whole group of people, what's the First Amendment? Well, of course, we all know First Amendment's guaranteeing protection of speech. Not a single person they interviewed on the street, no matter what their age or background, even knew, even could come close to knowing what the First Amendment was. When you consider that these people could give you an extremely in-depth understanding of television programs, you know, like the Duck Dynasty or whatever that baby show is, and the Kardashians, but they couldn't tell you about the First Amendment, nor do they have any interest in it. So the vast majority of Americans are simply disconnected from the reality of the world they live in, and yet without an awareness, they're going to be victimized. And that's unfortunate. But that's the way it is at this moment, and I'm thankful that our audience is aware. I want people to realize that on Monday night's show, I'm going to be doing a really in-depth two-hour documentary, original presentation, Who Controls the World? Please set time aside to listen to it. It'll be an eye-opener for you. And I thank you all for taking your time today and listening in. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about three things. The showdown vote in the House this morning to fund government operations, but also to scuttle Obamacare. The Republicans' war yesterday declared on the poor, not on poverty. And we asked the question, what is the correct term for what's going on in Syria? Is it a civil war, a revolution, a coup in the making? It's a really important question.
I would agree. Right now, Utrice Lead.